From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us, followed by Conversations with Linda. Here's what's happening. Sad news to report tonight. Our dear friend Alan Combs, host of the nationally syndicated Alan Combs Show on Fox News Radio, has died after a brief illness. Combs, a fixture on Fox News since the cable television channel's launch in 1996, was 66 years old. We communicated a lot via email, a lot, on stories and ideas. He loved the Merlin time track, folks. And every time I'd have them on, he'd send me an email going, what about this? What about that? Alan Combs, dead at the age of 66. Almost 6 years after he was forced to leave his home following the Fukushima disaster, the Japanese government has informed Tori Unzal that it's now safe for him to return to that small agricultural village of Ilit. He and the rest of some 6,000 people who were once called home at that village, located 24 miles northwest of that doomed power plant, were told that the evacuation orders were to be lifted by the end of March as the government has completed its decontamination work and reduced the average radiation level. I wouldn't go back. North Korea appeared to lash out at China, can you believe that, in a state media commentary aiming unusually pointed rhetoric at a powerful neighbor that has long relied on for economic and diplomatic support. They're a little concerned over its nuclear capabilities, the China is, and apparently that's why North Korea is a little upset with China. America's status as an economic superpower is still very much intact, even as China steadily closes the gap. The U.S. economy, as measured by gross domestic product, is still by far the largest in the world at $18 trillion. And also a report today that housing, people are buying houses like crazy. Let's check in with registered investment advisor Michael Mish Shedlock. Mish, that's a good sign for the economy.
Hey, George, I never bought this China was going to overtake the U.S. story. I've written about that many times. People have been talking about this for years. George, it's not going to happen.
I don't think so.
They don't have free capital markets. They don't have a bond market. They don't even float the yuan. And guess what? If they did, I think the yuan would crash. And I said this back when everyone was in love with the yuan. And now everyone knows it. There's capital flight coming out of China. They want to come to the U.S. They want to come to Canada. They're going to Australia. That's who's bidding up these insane property prices in those three places and on the west coast of the U.S. Back to the economic picture here in the U.S., though, we've had really mixed reports. For a while, they were pretty bad. Now I would just call them mixed. We did have a very good housing report that was, but that was not new home sales or housing formation, which would mean people are
more jobs,
start families. Yes, exactly. This was existing home sales, and it was 1 month, and these numbers are heavily revised, so we have to see. Meanwhile, I have to laugh at this at the way mainstream media reports everything. Did you see these reports on the FOMC meetings? All the headlines came out, the Fed is going to hike fairly soon, and they put fairly soon in quotes. I went back and looked at the exact statement that the Fed made. It's right there in the minutes, and you didn't see any of the mainstream media quote this. They said it might be appropriate to raise rates soon if incoming information is in line or stronger with expectations and their inflation objectives are increased. So I wrote this on my blog, rate hikes might be appropriate if something occurs and something else occurs. That was actually what they said, but that sure is not what you got if you were watching the mainstream media reports, was it?
A lot of qualifiers, Mish, but so far things are pretty good. Stock market's up about 10% since President Trump was elected. Let's keep our fingers crossed. Eating loads of fruit and vegetables, 10 portions a day, may give us longer lives. According to the researchers, the study in London calculated such eating habits that could prevent 7.8 million premature deaths each year, they say. Older people who suffer back pain have a 13% increased risk of dying from any cause, according to new research there. UFO sightings have reached an all-time high, according to statistician Sam Munford. Munford collated sightings recorded by our friend Peter Davenport's National UFO Reporting Center. It records sightings worldwide, and let's check in with Peter. That's a pretty good statistician there, Peter.
Yeah, that's an interesting report, George, and I'd like to communicate with Mr. Munford and compare notes with him. It sounds like he does some good work, too, but it's been a very exciting week with a rich crop of wonderful reports, many of them prepared by regular Coast listeners. So I guess these reports are having an effect. I'd like to start with a very nicely prepared report from a gentleman who is a Coast listener who describes that, or who writes that he used to be in the U.S. Air Force. Back in the early 1950s, he was stationed up in several points in northern Canada. He writes he was at Goose Bay for a while and a number of other sites that were related to the distant early warning system to detect incoming Soviet bombers. He said routinely they used to see UFOs on their radar screens and would often scramble F-86s and F-94s that went up and toyed with these objects. To the best of his knowledge, he writes, they never fired on one, which is probably a pretty good policy. But readers, Coast listeners who are interested in reading those reports can access his report from our website, ufocenter.com. Very nicely prepared report. And so as not to leave the Navy out of the fray, George.
Never.
Out of respect to your service days in the U.S. Navy, just received a report from Capitola, California, very close to Monterey. On the 13th of February, a young woman writes, she saw six of these very bright, very mysterious fireballs in a formation out over Monterey Bay. Very strange place for sky lanterns to be launched. And I mention the Navy because that's, as you probably know, very close to the Naval Postgrad School, also the Defense Language Institute, where I used to study Russian way back. And I'd like to know how many people posted at the Naval Postgrad School might have seen those objects. And the source of this report submitted a very high-quality photograph. People can see it on our website at ufocenter.com, one of the better photographs of a cluster of orbs. Next report comes from the 16th of February from Social Circle, Georgia. A woman claims that she saw a very large triangular craft with red lights in the three corners of the triangle. How many times have I heard that type of report, that type of description, hovering right over her neighbor's house? So a lot's going on, and would welcome reports from anybody among the Coast listeners who've seen UFOs at any time in their lives.
You got it. Thanks, Peter. Talk to you next week. A great story at coasttocoastam.com in our highlight reel, a bizarre moment as a ghost pushes open a heavy metal hospital door. It's on video footage. Go take a look at it. It's part of our four little segments there at coasttocoastam.com in the highlight reel. Up next, we're going to talk about the dark, deep side of Hollywood. Jay Dyer joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Jay Dyer runs the very popular site jaysanalysis.com, which has grown to become one of the premier film and philosophy sites on the net. He focuses on the interplay of film, geopolitics, espionage, psychological warfare, everything we talk about here on the program. And his latest book is called Esoteric Hollywood, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Hello, Jay.
Hey, George. How are you?
I'm fine. I hope you are, too.
Doing great. Glad to be here. I'm honored.
This is a fascinating subject and topic. And how long has this been going on in Hollywood? I would guess since its infancy, hasn't it?
You are absolutely right. Yeah, you could go all the way back to the early days, and I think we get images of that even in the symbolism of, say, D.W. Griffith films, right, with the giant Babylonian gate that's now a mall. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I think Hollywood as Babylon. You know, of course, other people have written on this, Kenneth Anger and people that were into the occult. And so what I tried to do was kind of update that approach and look at films, look at directors, mainly from the vantage point of symbolism or what we call semiotics, you know, the philosophy of signs and symbols, and kind of do a cryptography of movies.
Let's start with what you talk about, occult Hollywood. What is that?
Well, I think most people view Hollywood as kind of just, you know, entertainment. It's just fun. Yeah. It's just pop culture.
Scary. It's got it all.
Right. But actually, I think there's a deeper, darker message that most people would, I think, be shocked to find out about. But the odd part, I believe, is that a lot of the films, maybe they're not the most popular, something like Eyes Wide Shut or something like that, but these films have actually been showing us what really goes on behind the scenes. So that's what occult or esoteric Hollywood is. And people ask me, what is this book? And I say, well, it's Roger Ebert on acid is the best way I can put it.
Is it particularly evil, what they do?
Sometimes. I mean, I'm not trying to castigate everybody under one umbrella or anything like that, but there's definitely tendencies amongst certain directors. I think certain directors, like Kubrick, for example, were trying to, you know, expose things and tell us the truth. Other directors show us the dark side of things, like David Lynch in his, I guess what you call neo-noir psychodramas. But you're absolutely right that there is a dark side to this.
Kubrick died before he finished Eyes Wide Shut, and that was a movie, Jay, I had to watch three times before I really understood it. But by the time I saw it the third time, it was pretty good.
I agree, George. I watched it probably 10 times. I fully understand it, but I went ahead and proposed a thesis on it. And, yeah, I think that's what you get is the idea of a middle-class, upper-middle-class, nouveau riche kind of guy, Bill Harford, the Tom Cruise character, who thinks that he's at the top of the totem pole. You know, he thinks he's got it made, and then he runs into a group of people that are what we might call the super rich, and they're into a lot of very bizarre things that he's not aware of. And he learns that they kind of have all the capabilities of even like an intelligence agency. So they're able to actually craft his reality. They spy on him. They follow him. They can concoct news stories. And so they really determine his perception and his reality. And so I would argue that ultimately kind of Hollywood operates this way. You know, Hollywood itself is kind of a giant cult intelligence agency that can do all this stuff.
Well, I think, too, it's the New World Order. It's exactly what the Illuminati do on a regular basis, these very bizarre things, these strange get-togethers, parties, strange things happen at the Bohemian Grove, for example. I think Kubrick was right on when he did this.
Yeah, and I think that's the point I try to get at in the book, is that we're being shown through these films a kind of revelation of the method, right? This ritual psychodrama that's being played out on the screen is actually going on in a real way, you know, in the dark side of Laurel Canyon, you know, this kind of stuff that has this really shady background, where there was actually a secret military Air Force base that filmed all kinds of propaganda films, and actually films that we don't even know about. And it's now owned by the actor Jared Leto, this entire facility up in the Wonderland Avenue. I went there a few months ago, actually visited the place and checked it out, and it really was an actual Air Force secret movie studio.
Hey, the fact
there's
that
all kinds of hidden things like that.
The fact that Kubrick died before he finished Eyes Wide Shut, might there be a conspiracy behind that? What do you think?
You know, a lot of people allege that, and I wouldn't be surprised. I think there is some evidence to suggest that, especially given the nature of what he exposes in that movie, and as well as themes in the rest of Kubrick's films. You know what I mean? He's talking about drugging the water. He's talking about the Rand Corporation and their, you know, plans for a giant mutually assured destruction, Cold War based on rational choice theory and all this madness, you know, the doomsday machine and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, he's exposing real hardcore stuff. So if anybody at the level of a well-known director was going to be targeted, it would definitely be him.
How about the work of Steven Spielberg? What do you think of his stuff?
You know, I think that I don't want to judge his motives, but I think that if we look at his films, he's choosing certain movies that are trying to tell a deeper story, right? I mean, why is he choosing? He's choosing AI, which was a Kubrick film.
Mm-hmm.
Kubrick was going to make AI. He wrote this script. Spielberg takes it over. He changes the ending, of course. He chooses H.G. Wells' films. These are, I believe, you could argue, illuminist films. I mean, H.G. Wells was very deeply into Freemasonry. He was a high-level Mason, and he wrote the esoteric teachings of Freemasonry into his novels, like The Island of Dr. Moreau and like War of the Worlds, like Time Machine. And when you read those books, you really understand that, oh, actually, he's writing this from a Masonic perspective. So I think Spielberg's taking those kinds of stories, and he's actually showing us a tremendous amount of predictive programming. Think about Minority Report. I mean, the whole movie Minority Report is about pre-crime, all this kind of stuff that we now see in the headlines.
That's true. Now, do you think people kind of edged him on to do stories like that in movies like that, or he created these himself?
Well, with something like Minority Report, you're looking at Philip K. Dick, and the story about Philip K. Dick is that he was in the circles of the early Silicon Valley people, so he kind of knew ahead of time what secret occulted technology they had and where they were going to take things. And then I think that Spielberg, being in those elite Hollywood circles, knows about a lot of this stuff too. And so that's probably why he chose, these kinds of legendary science fiction writers.
One of my favorite Spielberg movies, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I just loved it.
Yeah, and that's why I included it in the book. It's actually one of the first blockbuster alien UFO-related films. And not only that, it actually shows us quite a bit about the deep state, which is all in the news now, right?
I mean, that's right.
As a result of machinations behind the scenes with Russia and Trump and all this kind of stuff, we're hearing about the deep state, and it was actually Spielberg who was showing us how the deep state operates and keeps things secret, with Devil's Tower and with all. If you remember, in Close Encounters, the military and the news actually create fake news stories to distract from what was really going on.
Jay Dyer with us, his book, Esoteric Hollywood. Do you think governments would pass on information to like Steven Spielberg so he could do films and movies to kind of ease us into something?
Yes, yes, I cover that in my book. And in fact, there's actually academic studies to back that up, George.
Is that scary or is that good?
Well, I think there's probably good guys and bad guys in the establishment. So hopefully the good guys can win out in the long run. But yeah, there have been Trisha Jenkins, who is a University of Texas professor, who wrote a book called CIA in Hollywood. There's also Operation Hollywood, which is a collection of articles by academics that actually charts the many, many films that have had direct government involvement. There's the liaison offices between the Pentagon and Hollywood, the CIA and Hollywood, the Army, and so forth. So this has been going on a long time, all the way back to things like Birth of a Nation.
Is it possible that when they give us this kind of information, like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, are they telling the director, Spielberg, I need you to temper this because eventually we're going to make an announcement that we've been visited and I want people to be accustomed to this?
One of the chapters that I included in the book is based on that very idea, George, and it's Mulholland Drive by David Lynch. And if you remember, in that really, really weird kind of cyclical, out of order film, there's a scene where there's a little short guy who sits in a room that's glassed off from everyone else, and he picks up this telephone and he calls and he says, "Who gets what role in what movie?" And how the movie's going to go.
I love it.
So I would say yes.
Hitchcock, of course, 007, you look at, and we'll get into more with David Lynch. When you put this together, and of course you've been doing a lot of work in the Hollywood area for some time, was it easy to find the subject matter?
No, it wasn't. Actually, I stumbled upon a lot of this stuff just accidentally through grad work. I was doing graduate work on how Ian Fleming, who's the creator and author of the Bond novels, how he crafted propaganda. And I'd read a few books that kind of dealt with Hollywood and conspiracy and the music industry and the Illuminati and stuff like that. But it was so much deeper than I initially thought, that there was just an infinite well from which you could dig and pull out new connections and new ideas. But I think that one of the best examples is Ian Fleming and Bond, because most of what Ian Fleming wrote about were based on his real covert operations, and he was for a long time, a naval psyops guy for the British Army, or for the British Navy, excuse me.
All right, we're going to come back and talk more with Jay Dyer right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Jay Dyer with us. His book, Esoteric Hollywood. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, jaysanalysis.com. I want to talk with you about that in a second, Jay. But let's talk about 007 and James Bond. Based on reality or the great mind of Ian Fleming?
Both, actually. Fleming was very interested in integrating his own life experiences and adventures, as well as people that he worked with, people like Maxwell Knight and Dennis Wheatley, and he kind of concocted this fictional character, right, of James Bond that is an amalgamation of all those things. And so, you know, Fleming himself was involved in real-world covert black operations like Operation Goldeneye, for example. And then he wrote these into the novels, and so they function partly, you know, as his own kind of artistic expression, but also as a kind of black op. I believe the novels themselves actually reveal how the world really works in terms of black markets and things like this, and that's why I take something like Diamonds Are Forever. You know, you have Blofeld basically running a bunch of shells and fronts for a secret space program, right? I mean, that's what the whole plot of the movie is, and he's going to set up these satellites that are going to use like directed energy weapons and things that really are studied, you know, by the military and the Navy. You can look at The Man with the Golden Gun. If you watch the film version of that, with Christopher Lee, have him as the villain who's setting up this giant directed energy weapon. So I think Fleming was, even though, you know, sometimes the novels and the films differ, he was working with the producers, you know, Broccoli and Saltzman, even after some of the early novels were turned into the films. So I would suspect that there's a lot of revelation that continued on even into, you know, the campy Roger Moore period of Moonraker. I mean, Moonraker is all about eugenics, about depopulating the planet. That's what Hugo Drax is going to do, right?
No, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, set up his own new human race with him as the new Adam and the new God.
And he looked at Spectre as the organization that was evil and corrupt. Kind of reminds me of like an ISIS type thing.
Well, that's funny you say that, because the Cold War period he was basing it on, it was called SMERSH, and SMERSH was a real Soviet counterintelligence operation. And then by the time of the Cold War ending, it became an international secret terrorist organization. And what's funny about that is that, you know, Fleming was telling us a long time ago that there would be a transition out of Cold War into War on Terror, right?
Let's take some calls while we continue chatting about Esoteric Hollywood. Kathy's in Olympia, Washington. Welcome to the program. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I wanted to ask your guest about the movie Eyes Wide Shut, because I was very interested in that movie. And what part of the movie was not finished by him? And the ending... It was probably the ending, and what I understood about the ending was that the AIDS thing came up in my mind, so I'd like some comments about that, too.
All right. I would assume it was the ending, Jay, that he just didn't finish, right?
That is the story, yeah, and supposedly it relates to more revelations about what this secret society magic sex cult was involved in. And that's, you know, the controversial point. I didn't hear exactly what she said about the end.
Talking about AIDS or something? Did that have anything to do with the film?
It could. I mean,
I never heard that.
Yeah, I mean, the hooker, Domino, the character, is said to at one point have AIDS in the film, but I don't know anything beyond that.
A great movie, nonetheless. If you haven't seen it, watch it, but you're going to have to watch it a couple times before it makes any sense at all. Nicole Kidman in there, and Tom Cruise, of course. We go to Joe, Long Island, New York. Hey, Joseph, go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, my first question would be on Bewitched, Elizabeth Montgomery playing Serena. It seemed innocent enough, the whole show, but was there anything behind the scenes with that? My second question would be the original Planet of the Apes and that Statue of Liberty scene, and And what would you derive from that? I know they tried to duplicate that movie, but I guess you just can't remake something.
No, you can't. You can't remake a classic. But let's talk a little bit about Bewitched, Elizabeth Montgomery. Was there any message there behind that one, Jay?
You know, I'm not sure about the original, but if you watch the remake with Will Ferrell and Nicole Kidman, of all people, you'll notice that she plays the witch there. So I pose the thesis in my book, actually, that sometimes actors are chosen for certain roles because of deeper, more esoteric reasons. So you'll see Johnny Depp playing certain roles continually, Nicole Kidman, Nicolas Cage, right? These different actors will be chosen, I believe, for certain roles for esoteric reasons. So it's entirely possible that Kidman got the Bewitched role for a certain reason.
And what about the Statue of Liberty scene at the end of Planet of the Apes? That was eerie. I remember that one.
Eerie, yeah. It could be a predictive programming instance where, you know, we saw so many examples of 9/11, right, prior to the events of September 11th in film. You know, so we had a lot of fictional predictive programming that I think pointed us in the direction of a conspiracy. So it's entirely possible that one day we could see that with something like the Statue of Liberty.
You write a lot about the director, Alfred Hitchcock, a genius, no doubt.
Yeah, Hitchcock is interesting because you have one of the earliest mentions of the CIA in North by Northwest, actually. You have Hitchcock, you know, revealing things about intelligence agencies, the OSS and things like Notorious. He constantly focuses on alters and alternate personalities with Marnie, with Psycho, Strangers on a Train. And so I actually think Hitchcock is one of the earliest, you know, clear evidences of film presentations of MKUltra or what we know of MKUltra.
And was he being directed by anybody, or were these things he came up with on his own?
I would say there's probably a little bit of both, because both the Tavistock Institute and the British Ministry of Information worked directly with Hitchcock. Hitchcock actually filmed propaganda for the British Ministry of Information, which meant that he was directly tied to MI6.
Carlos in Carson, California is with us now. Hello, Carlos.
Yes, good evening. Question for your guest.
Sure.
I've noticed in some of the films that I've seen, Hollywood films, that they show the number 11 quite often, either the number 11 itself or in combinations of numbers totaling 11. For instance, in one of the Tom Cruise movies that I saw, I forget which one it was, but there were like four different scenes when the number 11 shows up. And then, for instance, at the movie Outbreak, about a virus breaking out, the antidote for the virus was 101, and there's your 11 there. So I'm just wondering, what message has Hollywood given there? What does the number 11 signify? I've been very puzzled by that for a long time.
Anything with these numbers, Jay?
Well, there is quite a bit of numerology in film. You're absolutely right. And it does tie into gematria. That is a very prevalent view amongst the directors. They'll mention it here and there, even in DVD commentaries. And I would say that 9 and 11 are obviously important numbers because,
yeah,
well, for many reasons, we know that it's the number of emergency, right? But 9 in a lot of Western occult traditions is a number of initiation. And if you think about a 1 and a 1, that is, of course, two towers. It's also Jachin and Boaz in Freemasonry. And it could be binary, too, right? It could be 101. That is the number that comes up a lot in the Matrix, right? Because computers are based on, you know, binary.
Why do they come up with these kind of mysteries and parables and things like that? What are they trying to accomplish?
I think it functions on many levels. I think that a lot of the people who talk about it affecting our subconscious, that they're right about that, that there are archetypal forms and symbols, and a lot of those are geometric. You know, Pythagoras talked about this, Plato talked about it, comes up in the Phaedo, it comes up in the Republic. So they know that there's archetypal forms and symbols, and that's directly tied to mathematics. But it can also be used by intelligence agencies. They can speak to or convey messages through ciphers and codes, and a lot of that involves numbers.
Let's go to Jersey City, New Jersey. Paul's with us on the wild card line. Paul?
Hi. Good morning, George and Mr. Dyer.
Hi there.
Pleasure to speak with you. You mentioned Christopher Lee. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I I believe Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing, I believe they were in intelligence during the Second World War. And I'm just wondering, I remember watching Moonraker, and I'm thinking, is it possible Christopher Lee added something of his own in there from his own experiences? Would you know anything about that, Mr. Dyer?
Absolutely. In fact, what you want to watch is the movie Devil Rides Out, which is a 1968 film based on the Dennis Wheatley occult novels, where he plays the Duke de Richelieu, and he is an occult investigator who basically confronts this satanic cult that's run by a guy named Mokata, who is the same actor that plays Blofeld in Diamonds Are Forever. So, yes, and in fact, the story is that Christopher Lee was in, I believe, the RAF, and some have whispered that he might have been an assassin, but I think the London Telegraph has tried to debunk that. So it's still maybe kind of classified as to exactly what his role was, but he was, in some sense, in military intelligence.
Exactly who was David Lynch, Jay?
David Lynch is a director who likes to draw his films from out of the psychosphere.
And does he do a good job
kind of
doing
avant-garde, avant-garde director who very influenced by noir, and so you could say, as I said, it's neo-noir psychodrama, right? So it's surrealistic. It utilizes a lot of different Eastern traditions like Zen Buddhism. It all kind of coalesces into stories that are generally told out of order, but that usually have some esoteric or occult connection. Everything, you know, from Twin Peaks all the way into Lost Highway and into Mulholland Drive and Inland Empire.
Were there a lot of codes and messages in his work?
Oh, I believe so, absolutely. And just like Kubrick, you're going to find very similar themes of mind control. You're going to find themes of alternate personalities. This comes up very often in Twin Peaks. You're going to find themes of cults, and that a lot of times in the background behind who might be running a city or a town is that it's not just black markets or fronts and shell corporations for some mob or something like that. It's actually a cult behind them, and then they're tapping into the demonic even.
Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California now. Hi, Tom.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. Jay Dyer, it's a pleasure and honor to speak with you. There were two movies concerning military governmental special operations that appear to be a revelation of the methods, so to speak, that appeared to have, as you put it, codes and messages. One movie was Spartan, starring Val Kilmer.
Yes.
And the other movie was Steven Spielberg's Munich, which dealt with special operations of Israeli Mossad. And I've watched those movies, like Eyes Wide Shut, you can watch them several times and, you know, get something new each time. So I was wondering if you would comment on either or both.
Yes, if I remember, Spartan is a David Mamet film. And, you know, Mamet has actually made himself very openly political, at least in the last few years. And you know, moving more in the direction of something like conservative Tea Party right wing type views, so that's very, very interesting. So I wonder if maybe he wasn't telling us something in Spartan, which, if I recall, is about the abduction of the president's daughter. Is that right?
I think it might have been.
Yeah, and then Munich. That is interesting because I don't really know exactly what was going on with that story of the bombing, but the weirdest part of that movie is that in the final scene, you have the bomb going off at the point of coitus. So I wonder if Spielberg isn't, in some sense, talking about a deeper occult reference there.
What about Dr. Strangelove? What did you think of that one?
Oh, I mean, this is one of the best examples of what I write about, because he's talking openly about the Bland Corporation, which is the Rand Corporation. And I think that you can make the argument that no deep state foundation think tank entity has so formed the modern world and modern America like the Rand Corporation. And I think that Kubrick was absolutely warning us about that.
We've got Doug now in Sayreville, New Jersey, east of the Rockies. Doug, it's your turn. You're up with us.
Good evening. evening, gentlemen. It's a pleasure speaking with you tonight.
Hello.
Yes, I'm a big fan of the genre. I like to, when I can, see some of these movies about the, I guess you would call the conspiracy theories and whatnot. I watch, every time it comes on, I have to watch it. In fact, I read the book about the Manchurian Candidate.
Great movies. Yeah.
And do you think that the movie came first, or the idea of the testing and
manipulation,
and attempting that came first?
Good question. What do you think came first? Something like that. The manipulating the politician or the movie?
Oh, manipulating the politician, because that goes back to the ancient world.
It does.
But yeah, the Richard Condon novel, I believe, is a few years prior to the John Frankenheimer movie, which is excellent, by the way. But yeah, that's based on real programs that, you know, you had real MKUltra doctors that were publishing articles. George Estabrooks was writing articles about hypnosis and couriers and trigger words even prior to that. So, yeah, those programs are real, and they were being revealed in fiction, you know, prior to anybody knowing about them, just like what Hitchcock was doing at the same period.
Jay, how could our knowledge of what Hollywood is doing help us in our own day-to-day life? Can it?
Well, that's why I wrote the book, George. And
perfect.
Yeah, you can get, you know, signed copies even directly from me at my site. And I really wanted to use movies to wake people up and to educate them about how the world really works. And so, yes, we can turn it into, instead of a propaganda tool, something that's an educational tool to wake your friends and family up to see that what you're being fed is perception management. It is, you know, creating a consensus reality, and that you can actually use these things, which they're not all bad. I'm not trying to say that. Some of them are good. Some of them have good messages. But regardless, if you have the tools, if you have the eyes to see, you can actually deconstruct it and learn how the world really works.
Esoteric Hollywood, Jay Dyer, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. What do you do next, Jay? What's your next work?
Jay Wiedner and I, who I believe you've had.
Oh, I love Jay.
Times, yeah. We are presently scripting a show that's roughly based on the material in the book, and so this will be with Gaia.
Perfect.
Yeah, we'll be doing, I think, 39 episodes based on different directors and films.
That will be a home run. Let us know when they're done, okay?
Yes, sir.
Great. Thank you, Jay. Jay Dyer, the name of the book, Esoteric Hollywood. Boy, it's a fascinating read about just what's going on in Tinseltown, to be sure. Up next, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with all kinds of great stories, including, are we living in a hologram-type universe? Are we real? We'll find out.